Hey everybody, welcome back to another week. This is The Damage Report. I'm Johnny Arola. Brooke is here.
Hey, Brooke. Hi,
how's it going?
I'm glad to be here. Hi.
Brooke just spent the past couple of minutes telling us how little sleep she's gotten recently, and yet you would not know it to look at her.
She's
bright and bubbly more than I am.
I feel like my voice sounds a little funny today.
Yeah.
You think a little bit?
We'll let the fans decide.
We'll let the fans decide.
And the way that they'll decide is that you're going to be talking about a number of different things in the show today.
Uh-huh.
We've got so much news. Virginia's got a little bit of a scandal on its hands. A little bit of blackface. Arguably offensive. We'll break that down. And we'll decide once and for all. Here on the show today.
Okay.
Axios got leaked schedules from the president. How much time each day does he spend working versus trumping? We will break that down later on.
Okay.
Howard Schultz had his big first week in the media, and we've got favorability ratings.
People, I think we got to stop. I think we just got to put
don't
our
cover
feet
them at all?
Down. Yeah, we've got to put our foot down.
I want to do this last one.
Okay.
Because it's going to be fun.
Okay.
Then perhaps we'll move on. Although there is bad news in this poll as well. So it is a little bit of fun, a little bit not fun. 21 Savage
was arrested.
Mm-hmm. We will break down the details, and I will discover who that is a little bit later on the show.
Okay.
Oh,
I think you'll like him. He's likable.
Really?
Yeah, I think you will like him.
Okay. Well,
there's
a lot for his
community. I think you'll like him.
Well, that's the only fact other than the ICE thing that I know about him. So yes, I am predisposed to like him for both reasons. Ashley Balcerzak of the Center for Public Integrity is going to join us to break down the financing of Cory Booker. So traditionally, going back years, his big donors, how much money has he gotten from different industries? What sort of support is he going to get from different super PACs? We'll be breaking down all those details as we did for Kirsten Gillibrand about a week ago. And then if there's time, this is the first time I think you're going to be in one of these segments.
Yeah.
But we will induct a new member into a very exclusive club, and that is the garbage people.
Okay. Uh-huh.
We will let you know
got
who
it.
That
okay.
is and why they
got
deserve
okay.
to be in the can a little
My
bit
goodness.
Later on. But first, serious news. Ralph Northam of Virginia, the governor, a couple days ago, it broke, I think it was late Friday, yearbook pages were revealed from his time back in the 80s in med school that had some images that some people have interpreted as racist. So let's take a look at these.
Stop. Don't say it.
And you're
like
going to see, obviously, it's racist.
So I know, you're being sarcastic.
You see the photo of him there looking very distinguished. This was the early 80s, which is why you don't have those lasers in the background of his portrait. That's what I would have gotten in the late 80s. So, but what you do have is a photo of one person in blackface, another person in either a really ill-conceived ghost costume or the Ku Klux Klan outfit. Mm-hmm. Both. In one photo in a yearbook, which is really going above and beyond. That's like try hard racism there.
You know, one, I think, important thing, if that yearbook like operates like generally most college yearbooks, is that he purchased that page.
Yeah.
Which then meant usually, like obviously I wasn't there, not a part of it, but I'm just going with what typically happens. Mm-hmm. He purchased that splash page. And then sent in the photos
that he wanted.
That he wanted. And so now that he's kind of going back and forth saying he's not sure that was him, he doesn't think that was him. I want to know, does that even matter? Because you obviously like signed off on it. You thought it was okay. You thought that was good. And then there's the whole other conversation. This is why we call it systemic. And when we talk about like how black women are treated in the healthcare system, that's one of the reasons why, like those people. And I think the definition of a racist is someone who does or says racist things. So I'm comfortable saying that person at that time is racist. Mm-hmm. And that person went to medical school and then went on to become the governor of a state.
Yeah. And along the way, a doctor as well.
A doctor, right. So what does that say about the people in his care?
Well, he would say it says nothing.
Right.
And so we're going to break down his varying and rapidly changing excuses or mea culpas or whatever on this, because it has gone through multiple phases. First, though, to set up why this became a big deal is within 30 seconds of these photos coming out, people began to call for him to resign, including some of the most high profile members of the state level and national level Democratic Party. People are so fake. Donald Trump Jr., he went on later to tweet, if this had been a Republican, they'd be all over him. It's like, dude, Everybody is saying this guy should resign, except for him. He doesn't think that he should. Everyone else is saying he should resign instantly. So I have picked one politician at random.
The only difference is that if this were a Republican, the president would be quiet.
Exactly. That is
everyone else, Democrats have a problem with racism, regardless of who it comes from.
Remember a couple of weeks ago when a sitting Republican congressman said, "When did white supremacy become offensive?"
Right.
Was Don Jr. calling for him to resign? I don't recall that. So people were calling for Northam to resign, including this chose randomly AOC, who said Northam must resign and those who try to help him stumble past this deserve scrutiny. If you can't understand how painful and eroding this is to American society, let alone the state of Virginia, take some time to read up this weekend. To start, try Between the World and Me. Yeah. And look, everybody, Chuck Schumer was calling for him to step down, Virginia Democratic Senators Wayne and Warner as well. Now, he doesn't want to, obviously, he wants to continue with his career. So he has, in various ways, sort of tried to explain this away or apologize. First, with an apology saying, "I am deeply sorry for the decision I made to appear as I did in this photo and for the hurt that that decision caused then and now." What's interesting about that apology is that it implies that it is him in the image. He either didn't mean that or decided to change his mind after, because later on he started saying, "That was not me."
Right.
In that. That wasn't me.
But he didn't stop there.
No, he did not. So I'm trying to figure out what his strategy is. And it seems like it's one of those things where it's like, okay, people are saying I did something really bad.
Uh-huh.
I don't want them to think that. So I will admit that I did other really bad stuff to be like, my defense of myself is plausible because look how honest he's being about other stuff. But the stuff he is saying he did is really weird. So we have some video, we have some quotes. First, here is a bit of his press conference.
"That same year, I did participate in a dance contest in San Antonio, in which I darkened my face as part of a Michael Jackson costume. I look back now and regret that I did not understand the harmful legacy of an action like that. It is because my memory of that episode is so vivid that I truly do not believe I am in the picture in my yearbook."
So he's saying the way that you know I'm telling the truth about not doing blackface is that I remember the other times that I did blackface.
And shoe polish is hard to get off your face.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yes. Well, let's expand on that. So he says, "I used just a little bit of shoe polish to put on my cheeks. And the reason I used a very little bit, because I don't know if anyone's ever tried that, you cannot get shoe polish off. But it was a dance contest. I'd always liked Michael Jackson. I actually won the contest because I had learned how to do the moonwalk. So don't make me step down. Also give me credit for being a good dancer." He said, "I don't know if anyone else has ever done this." No, most of us have not done blackface.
Right.
I've never put shoe polish on shoes, let alone on my face.
Oh, so you could have just put on a wig and been a perfectly fine Michael Jackson.
What's going to happen? Is he going to step down? Is he going to slide by? Is he just going to choose not to step down?
I don't know. This is Paula Deen-esque for me. I don't know.
Yeah, she recovered.
Did she?
Yeah, no, I think she's. I don't know if she's on TV again, but she's selling products and stuff. Like,
yeah,
she's doing okay.
I guess so. Yeah, I mean, there's a market for this.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be why she's selling products. There's a market out there. Obviously, look what's going on up top.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if he's going to resign. I have no idea. I don't know people like this, like, personally. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you see them all around. This is not surprising. This is not. Like, there were so many people who were like, "Oh, this is so shocking." This is not shocking.
Mm-hmm.
This is not shocking. Like, if you're paying attention to what's going on around you and just, like, living and walking through this country, this is not shocking.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't. Look, I'm so lucky to not have any awful, horrible, nasty friends.
Yeah.
Like this. So I don't know what he would do. I think he should resign. I don't know if he will. I don't know if the person who feels comfortable holding a press conference and wasting all of our time to deny something that he had at the very least approved to go on his yearbook page under his name,
mm-hmm.
And then tell some other offensive story. I don't know if he'll resign. It doesn't sound like someone who cares what you think about him.
Yeah, I would. Also, I guess, like, I like to think, like, I don't think, out of all the Halloweens I've participated in, all that I've been to, I don't think I've ever even seen anyone in blackface.
Yeah,
but
no,
we see in the news every year there's some kids who are like, "What? I don't
know."
No, get
we
it.
Know that because we know people
problem?
Are racist everywhere. Yeah.
But what? But we knew it in the 80s. It was awful to do this.
Yeah.
Like, they knew. I'm sure that what they were doing was, isn't this crazy? I'm gonna do blackface. And I'm gonna be surrounded by people who are gonna question me.
Nobody, no human being ever in the history of human beings like actually looks like what it looks like when you put black shoe polish on your face. So it's never, even
it's
the very first time someone did this, right? They were never trying to actually look like a black person.
Yeah, they were trying to be offensive.
Right, exactly. So it's always been racist because the action of doing it is that's what you're going for.
So look, at this point, I think we're agreed. We don't yet know if he's actually going to step down. I think he will end up stepping down.
I think he should, but
well, I certainly think he should. I think that he will. I want to give you just a little bit more context before we leave on other stuff that was in the yearbook. We haven't seen, but CNN has confirmed. So you saw that photo in a different yearbook at Virginia Military Institute. Northam was nicknamed Coon Man. He doesn't remember why. He was asked why. He doesn't remember why. But other stuff in that.
A couple people called him that, right? He never knew why. Okay. Joy.
That's weird. Okay. So other stuff in the yearbook you saw on page 10, a photo shows a man dressed up like a woman in a low cut white dress, pearls, a black wig and blackface. Next to the photo is the caption, "Baby love. Whoever thought Diana Ross would make it to medical school?"
Funny story there. Diana Ross's sister is a doctor.
There you go. It would have been more appropriate to go as her.
It's just like the joke, like, oh, black people can't go to medical school.
It's impossible.
They can. That one's sister did.
They could. Later in the yearbook, in a section devoted to student personal pages, a photo of three men with their faces blackened, wearing white dresses, white gloves, pearls, and wigs appears.
Awful school.
That photo appears on the page before Northam's personal page, so right before. On page 34, the pharmacology page, a photo of a white man, not in blackface, shows him holding a coffee mug bearing the words, "We can't get fired, slaves have to be sold."
These people are so bad.
And then on page, really fast, goes back to what you were saying about how they treat patients potentially. On page 10, there's a photo of a man groping a mannequin with the words, quote, "I try never to divulge my true feelings while examining my patients."
Yeah. The people of Virginia deserve better. The lieutenant governor deserves to not have to work alongside someone like this.
Yeah.
The people of Virginia, period. The people of this country deserve better. And I'm glad enough people are putting their foot down.
Yeah. So that would be Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax, who as of last night is facing a claim of sexual assault that he denies. So we'll have more on that later on. But Ralph Northam, this does not look good for him at all. We are living in the time of no shame whatsoever in politics, though.
I did not know about that.
It's basically just happened. So we're going to have more details a little bit later on. Anyway, we will see what happens with Ralph Northam. Should probably step down immediately, would be nice, or earlier. Okay, with that, we are going to take a break. We come back, more news.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. So we know that people don't like working for Donald Trump. And very frequently after they get booted out or leave, they write books and we figure out a whole bunch of stuff of what's going on. But there are some who hate working there that are still on the inside. And apparently in the past couple of days, one of those people chose to leak a number of different daily schedules for Donald Trump to Axios, giving us, I would say previously,
like confirming what we thought.
We sort of assumed this was going on, but now we know the actual numbers for what is going on in terms of what he does all day long. So Let's get into some details.
Okay.
Each day's schedule places Trump in, quote, location, Oval Office, from 8 to 11 a.m. That sounds good. But Trump, who often wakes before 6 a.m., is never in the Oval Office during those hours, according to six sources with direct knowledge. They could be wrong. They could be lying, to be fair. But that's what they say, and those are the people he has chosen to surround himself with. They say instead he spends his mornings in the residence watching TV, reading the papers. That implies that they are liars, by the way. And responding to what he sees and reads by phoning aides, members of Congress, friends, administration officials, and informal advisors. So the image that they sketch is that he is absorbing things. Whatever happens to be on TV, we'll say benefit of the doubt, he's watching Fox News.
Right.
Or newspapers. And then based on what he sees and what he reads, he then does things. Which sort of, the idea there is that he is just like, I don't know, one of us or something. Like, you know, we absorb the news and we tweet about it or we talk to a friend. He just does that with all the authority of the president. That I think is a very charitable impression of what he is doing. Because when you get into the numbers, it's not just that he's supposedly doing that, it's that he's doing a lot of that. So let's break down his official schedule by the numbers since November 7th. So right around the time of the midterm. Let's bring up this chart and you're gonna see that since then, until February 1st, executive time, the ironically labeled time where he is acting least like an executive, totals 297 hours. That is like two-thirds of the total time, or close to two-thirds. You have meetings for 77 hours, lunch for 39 hours. Hypothetically, he could be working during lunch, I guess. You know, one hand on the McRib, one hand on the phone. I do, exactly. Maybe he's doing that. Events, 20 minutes. I feel like that's not to scale if that's, oh, it's 38 hours. Okay, good. So that's, you know, that you get meetings, you get your events, which fulfill a political, you know, goal or whatever. He could be meeting with foreign dignitaries. He could be, you know, doing some sort of, I don't know, a bill signing or something like that. But that executive time, that is a big chunk there.
Yeah.
And,
Golf, is that included in executive time?
I don't know.
Because we've seen him playing golf on the weekday.
That's true.
Often.
I think that this is the official schedule on weekdays, I think.
Okay.
So he's watching a lot of TV other than that, by the way. Let's give you an idea of how this works out on particular days. So for instance, he had 1 hour of scheduled meetings on January 18th and 7 hours of executive time. Now bear in mind, this is during the shutdown. This is when supposedly he is scrambling to put things back together. He's worried about this national emergency that it hasn't yet been declared, but it's obviously going on at the border. We face all of these challenges. The government's not even functioning. He spends seven times as long watching TV and reading newspapers, if we are being incredibly charitable, as he does actually meeting with people like Mick Mulvaney and Steve Mnuchin during an incredibly important time where the government is shut down, people are going without their salaries and things like that. And I think that this is a great thing. I tweeted something about this yesterday. It is embarrassing. I would say that personally, it is pathetic that he worked his whole career to get into the White House. And once he gets there, he has no interest whatsoever in actually being president. But what's the alternative?
Yeah, but that's
what would he be doing with his time that would be better for the country or for progressives or for whoever?
Right. I don't know. This doesn't really freak me out.
No?
I mean, it's kind of like what I
expected.
He spends
6 or 7 hours a day?
And that starts at 11. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know. This is kind of what I expected. And just what you just said is kind of what essentially like people who had worked with him before knew about him were saying would happen if he were to win the presidency. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. And the thing is.
That he wasn't really interested in being president. He wanted to win.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that makes that a little bit more annoying is that that was true, but he was also constantly saying, if I get in, I'm not going to have time to watch TV. I'm not going to have time to play golf. That Obama, he was lazy. He was the one who wasn't working.
Yeah, but he was like, not only, I'm not even talking about the things that he also was saying that turned out to be lies, but he was saying things that couldn't even like possibly come true.
Like what?
So like the Mexico is going to pay for the wall.
Yeah, that's true.
So like there were a list of things he was telling absolute lies. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, like I just kind of assume it's all a lie.
Yeah, what I think is interesting about this is not that it's particularly surprising. Uh-huh. You know, as we said, we've known for some time that he's not really working, that he wakes up and just starts watching TV.
But he's not qualified for this. He keeps hiring people who aren't qualified.
Yeah, another reason why I think it's best that he's using his time in this way. Like they just plop him down at a desk, give him some crayons, and then he cranks out a few hours. But I think what is interesting about this is I think that whether they know it or not, the way that he operates, I think, is one of the reasons that a particular sort of person in America really likes him. That he just sits around his house, he eats fast food, he watches Fox News, and he screams about it. He screams at the TV, he turns his screams into tweets. Like, the people who are watching Fox News, that is the life that they're living.
Yeah.
These are retirees who are pissed off at the changing world around them. They're scared of demographic change. And then they've found their avatar, a guy who spends even more time than them watching TV, a guy who has been gifted with so much privilege in terms of money and access and now political power, who doesn't care to learn about the world around him or how government is supposed to function. He supposedly has policies he wants, he has values he wants to pursue, but doesn't care to actually put the time into doing it. He is like the embodiment of American mediocrity.
Yeah, but that's not why they like him. The dog whistles. That's it. It's nice to, like, if you feel
that's a lot of what he's screaming from Fox News.
Well, yeah, I mean, but yeah, that's it. That's it. That's why. That's why he's so popular. So it doesn't matter what he does or what he's qualified for or what he's going to do. It's the fact that he is saying things out loud that a lot of intelligent people in your personal life have been telling you that you cannot say out loud. That at the very, like, you know, we know it's there. Yeah. We know you're going to act on it, but you cannot say it out loud. And people have been shamed, not enough, but, you know, a little bit for that behavior. Now they have a leader who is like, no, let's go.
Yeah.
That's why they like him.
I think what you just described is the reason that a lot of these cults of personality around people in politics and people in media sort of come about. Like, there are people who believe awful things or crazy things, and they just want to see someone in an official context. Like, coming from a TV screen.
They're tired of being shamed for their beliefs.
Exactly. They just want someone who seems smarter or, you know, whatever, more authoritative to say the same thing. By the way, the defense of this reporting that came about when Sarah Huckabee Sanders was asked, she says, while he spends much of his average day in scheduled meetings, events, and calls, there is time to allow for a more creative environment that has helped make him the most productive president in modern history. First of all, that is how you describe a kid that you were enrolling in an arts class because he can't take, you know, normal life or whatever.
Right.
But also, the most productive, I mean, come on. He's got some executive orders, they passed a tax bill, and that is effectively it. I guess he shut down the government for the longest time in history. That's an achievement.
He keeps lying to y'all.
That's true. That? He's fit in a lot of time for that. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We come back. 21 Savage has been arrested, and Howard Schultz, the numbers are in. Has he actually swayed the American people after this? Welcome back to the show, everyone. Let's turn now to the Democratic primary. Well, or at least an effect on the Democratic primary. Howard Schultz, billionaire, beloved across the nation, I'm sure. He's been in this race for like a week now. And I've been curious to find out his big appeal, where he was all over the news, all over social media. He got on The View. Has he swayed the American people? Well, it's going to take a while to be sure about that, but we do have a little bit of initial polling. So, Change Research did a poll a couple days ago, and they figured out his approval rating and also what effect he would have on the general election if he does run, as he says he will, as an independent candidate. So, amongst Democrats, favorability, he is at 4% favorable. That's not good. 50% unfavorable. So that implies that people don't like him if they know who he is, but a lot of them don't know who he is. Okay, well, look, he's not running as a Democrat. I mean, he wants to be something sort of apart from them, so that's understandable. Okay, so what about Republicans? Well, he has 4% favorability, 43% unfavorable, so even fewer of them know who he is than the ones who do don't tend to like him. But again, that's in the established parties, and he wants to run as an independent, so that's not going to be his base. His base is independents, and amongst them, he has 4% favorability, and they don't know who he is at all. For some, well, I mean, I would say in general, independents tend to pay less attention to politics and stuff like that. That's why I think that independent is generally defined in a very loose way.
Yeah, I mean,
4% in all groups.
Outside of the fact that he's rich, demands that he get so much attention because, like, you know what I mean? There are so many random people who decide to run for president that you never hear about because. Even Richard Ojeda has a real job in politics, and he's not going to get this type of attention. But it's like,
well,
so
we
what?
We had him on the show.
You did, but I think I'm more talking like the broader sense of just like how much coverage he's gotten. And I wonder, like, is it just? And it's like, so I feel like the complaint is that we want to get out of that like good old boys club, but like we can't. we can't, like, we're addicted to it.
Well, I think there's a few explanations as to why he gets the coverage he does. I can say that for me, the reason that we've talked to him multiple times is I want to scare him away from running because he has no place in the election. I think he would have a negative impact on the election. So I want to be able to look, Howard Schultz, you're awful and you shouldn't run. That's why I'm covering him. Yeah. I think that some in the media just take it for granted. Hey, billionaire.
Right.
That's awesome.
That's
there are others in the media that are like, hey, billionaire. It's not that I think he should run. It's that we know he could just buy his way onto the ballot if he wants. And so pragmatically, we need to cover him because he likely will get on the ballot.
But no one would know about it if we weren't talking about it so much. Not even us. I don't mean like you and your show, because speaking of Richard Ojeda, like that's a lot of people only knew that he was running at that point because of this
QRT.
Show. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think you do a good job. I don't think like you talking about Howard Schultz is taking away from other candidates who don't get a lot of attention. But I do mean in like just like the broader sense of all media. Like we are the ones almost essentially like telling like, hey, look who's running. Look who's going to come shake stuff up.
Yeah.
You probably wouldn't know or care. I wonder though.
I'll try to ban him after this.
No, this is not personally on you. I think you're doing a good job. I just mean, and I'm saying like we, because I feel like it's dishonest to say they and not like include myself.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. Oh, but I hate myself as much as I hate anyone else in the world.
Yeah, I just wonder like why like we can't, I don't know, it's the same thing every cycle. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, why.
Well, look, we're trying to cover as many as we can. I mean, we're having a reporter on to talk about Cory Booker in the next block. Here is one reason why I think people are covering it is because it could be consequential. Now, look, I have said, and this is me saying how I was wrong, that he has no natural base or constituency, which I continue to believe is true. But for some reason, despite the fact that nobody likes him, people like black licorice. 5 times as much as they like Howard Schultz. I'm one of those people. For some reason, he still apparently in polling would draw, if he was a third party candidate, he would draw enough votes to potentially swing the election. So he takes on average 4 points away from what the Democratic candidate receives in a two-way race while taking just 1% away from Donald Trump. That means Schultz's presence in the race makes Trump's margins between 2 to 4 points better than they would be without him in the race. Now they did this pulling him against a bunch of other people. Uh-huh. So Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, all of those. And he improves Donald Trump's chances in all of those potential matchups. So if he runs and if everything stays exactly the same as it is right now, which of course is not gonna be the case, he could affect the election. So that's one reason I think people are interested in him.
And he's like himself. A hybrid Democrat-Republican. It's interesting.
Exactly, right? Exactly. Although he's been a lifelong Democrat, but when he talks, I don't see anything Democrat about him.
Yeah,
he doesn't want taxes to go up.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Great, Howard.
Right. Yeah. That's very on brand for someone who has as much money as you.
Exactly. Okay. I do want to talk a little bit about this last story, though. ICE has apparently detained and is going to deport rapper 21 Savage. ICE says that the rapper, whose real name is Shayabin Abraham Joseph, is a citizen of the UK, shocking apparently everyone. The agency alleges that he entered the US legally in July of 2005 when he was a minor, but subsequently failed to depart under the terms of his non-immigrant visa. A statement from ICE says Mr. Abraham Joseph is presently in ICE custody in Georgia and has been placed in a removal proceedings before the federal immigration courts. ICE will now await the outcome of his case before a federal immigration judge to determine future actions. There's also a statement from his lawyer saying, Mr. Abraham Joseph is a role model to the young people in this country, especially in Atlanta, Georgia, and is actively working in the community, leading programs to help underprivileged youths in financial literacy. So this was surprising to a lot of people. It has since become, for some reason, a massive joke. Some people, I guess, semi-harmlessly are just joking about the fact that he's British, but right-wingers are like, they're exulting in the fact that it turns out that this guy is here illegally and he's going to be deported.
Yeah.
Including people like Tommy Lauren, who'd previously tried to seem cool by videotaping themselves singing his song.
Yeah.
Now are clapping at the fact that he's going to get thrown out of the country for some reason.
My first thought when I heard this was that it's not unheard of for ICE to have American citizens and hold them for years illegally, thinking that it's legal. Because what happens when you get there? if you're considered not a citizen, then you lose like all of the rights that citizens have. And so then you don't have a lawyer to be able to prove, and you don't have someone to bring your passport over, or you do, and they say, oh, this is a fake. Mm-hmm.
We've seen that recently in the news.
We've seen that happen, yeah. So that's still a worry. But then also there is just something so, and this is like the dream recovery. There is just something, it's so awful. And I just don't want us to be that country about punishing people who were brought over here as a child. Mm-hmm. And only know this country as their home.
Yeah.
It's just something so useless about ripping them away from their home.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be, I always say, you don't have to be a perfect person to be treated like, you know, just a basic human. Mm-hmm. But it is, you do want to point out that, like, you know, he's like, he's charitable in Atlanta, mm-hmm. and doing things for his community. I don't know. It's pretty awful.
Yeah. Is the country made better by him being thrown out?
Right.
Is that a good thing for Atlanta or for America?
It seems, it's like, similarly, it's, can you imagine like how traumatizing it would be if you didn't even remember or know that you weren't from here, and all of a sudden you had to be like shipped to Australia or something? I don't know. And then you just have to start all over in a country that you are not familiar with, and that you, like, what?
Yeah, even like the statements about it, like, he subsequently failed to depart under the terms of his non-immigrant visa. Okay,
what
that's
was a
technically
kid supposed
true.
To do?
Yeah, wait, but did he fail to depart? Did he just choose not to get on the plane?
Right.
He was like, you know what, I'm not going. No, I don't think he really had anything to do with it whatsoever. And so again, it brings up the whole topic around kids who have known no other life, who have contributed to the country during the time that they're here. By the way, they don't have to contribute to the country, but they do.
Right.
I just feel like we should point that out. It's not like you gain human dignity and respect if you contribute, but he also contributes.
Right.
And so again, just the right wingers who are like,
and
aha,
another
we got him.
Because I may have this wrong, but isn't that like the most undocumented immigrants come here? Mm-hmm. Legally and then just stay? It's really not like this made up evil at the border.
Yeah,
it's really
Savage,
like people
didn't
coming
walk
here
across the border.
It's people,
exactly.
And we don't even know. Like, we don't even know what's happening with him. But I think it just like sparks another conversation for how stupid the wall is.
Exactly. Including another 60-foot tunnel was found under a section where they want to build an enhanced wall. So stupid for many reasons.
Right.
And this story overall reeks of stupidity. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Ashley Balsajak is going to be joining us to break down the donors of new presidential contender, the Democratic primary, Cory Booker. We'll get all that and more after this. It is our goal here at the Damage Report to give you comprehensive coverage of all of the entrants in the Democratic primary, which is tough because there's a lot of them. But we're going to keep pressing on, and we're going to do another breakdown of the finances of a major candidate. We've already covered Kirsten Gillibrand, now Cory Booker, a new entrant to the race. And joining us now to provide this information, Ashley Balsajak, federal politics reporter for the Center for Public Integrity. Ashley, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you on. Very curious to learn more about Cory Booker based on your research. First off, I found it interesting that you describe in one of your pieces online that he already has the support of a sort of special super PAC. Can you break that down for us?
Yeah, of course. So the New York Times reported that a friend of his, Steve Phillips, had started a kind of hybrid PAC. So it's a super PAC, so it can take in as much money as it wants, spend as much money as it wants, but has another bank account that they can donate directly to people. And he's trying to raise $10 million to support Cory Booker, and says that he has about $4 million in promised pledges so far. And it's interesting because Cory Booker has spoken out against super PACs, Citizens United, which is the Supreme Court case that started them, basically, and called it. It says that it mutes the voice of millions of Americans. So it'll be interesting to see what he says about this group. That so far it hasn't raised any money or spent any money as of December 31st, which is the last report that they had to file with the government. So we'll see what happens there.
So they wouldn't actually they wouldn't be donating any money to him, but they would be spending in support of his candidacy. And I mean, I guess technically there would be no coordination, but it doesn't seem like it would be very difficult for them to spend a lot of money to help him out without actually having to be in constant contact with him.
Well, yeah, so there are laws against coordination between a super PAC and a candidate. So you can't share staff, you can't be talking about messaging and things like that. But the laws on that, there are kind of ways around that you see people doing it. You'll see a candidate put a ton of B-roll on the internet, and then you'll see that ending up in a super PAC ad. So, but even if they aren't coordinating together, I mean, if you're able to spend these millions, while if you're donating directly to Corey, you have a limit. So you can only donate $2,700 per election. While here, you can give to a super PAC, you can give $1 million. So you have much more resources here, even if you don't have like the messaging that maybe Corey wants you to have.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the industries that have been supportive of Cory Booker over the course of his career. Obviously, Wall Street seems like one of the big ones. What has been their history in terms of donations to Booker?
Yeah, he's very popular with the securities and investment industry. In 2013 and 2014, when he was running for a special election and his first term as senator, he got the most money from that industry. So OpenSecrets.org is a nonprofit that looks at the employer of every single person that donates. So a firm itself can't give money to Booker, but people that work for like Goldman Sachs, et cetera. And these companies can have their own political action committees where they take in money from their own employees and then they can give out an amount. So Booker got the most of any that cycle. So he's been pretty popular with them.
And so when you're thinking about like historically, what are the industries that seem to be the most supportive of him? That's the one that leaps to mind. But are there others where he's raised significant amounts of money?
Yeah, he's really popular with pro-Israel groups as well and pharmaceutical companies, because New Jersey is the headquarters of quite a few big ones like Johnson & Johnson, for instance. So he has notable amounts of money from them as well.
Yeah, and unfortunately, as we've broken down in some of our past reporting, I mean, getting a lot of money from Wall Street and from the pharmaceutical industries, those are some of the areas where he has either come out against bills that would have affected those industries or has made sort of incredibly defensive statements about them. So it does appear that this money could be earning them something. What about small dollar, like small donor contributions? How has he done in that area compared to other candidates in the primary?
Yeah, it's been notable. I think it was the Wall Street Journal that did an analysis about how Cory Booker is actually kind of one of the worst Democratic contenders with small donors. So I think he got like 12% of his donations from people under $200 the last 6 years, which is pretty far behind a lot of the people that he's competing against. So I think that this report was talking about how he's trying to figure out how we can improve. And it's interesting that he isn't doing that well because he has a huge social media following. He has like more than 4 million followers on Twitter. So you think that he would be able to kind of tap into this following that he already has. So it's kind of interesting.
Wow. And for comparison's sake for the audience, I believe that for Elizabeth Warren and for Bernie Sanders, those numbers are 50% and 61%, mm-hmm. I believe, although the audience should, of course, check that to make sure. Is there anything else that sort of stands out about Cory Booker's fundraising that people should know going into this primary?
So he's got quite a bit of money in the bank. He's got $4.1 million at this point, which it's kind of in the top three. I think Warren and Gillibrand have more, but that's pretty significant. Another thing to think about is he was one of the few senators that said that he wasn't going to take corporate PAC money. So one of like seven people. However, he's been raising money for these past 6 years and he's taken in corporate PAC money at that point, and he can transfer all this over to his presidential campaign. So he's not really starting from scratch. He already has like, I believe it's around $300,000 that he took from corporate PACs. Yeah. So just something to kind of keep in mind. Like he can start from now, but he does have that PAC support. Anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great reminder that we want people to, or at least speaking for TRT, we want people to not take this money. But there are some ways around it hypothetically. So that's why we need people with your sort of expertise to add the necessary financial context. Ashley, as always, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks so much.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to end with a new induction to Garbage People after this. Here at the Damage Report, I try to keep it positive when possible. But occasionally there's truly bad people in this country and they need to be profiled. And we do that in a segment we call Garbage People. So a few months back, there were multiple episodes in a row of the Damage Report where I was really bothered by what I saw as a really fake debate going on nationally about debate, where people were challenging each other to debates. They were talking about, why won't you debate this person to whoever? And I think the entire thing is a big sham. At the time, I called it self-aggrandizing performative masturbation. And I stand by that. And now there's more evidence to prove it, because the avatar of the fake argument about debate is this fellow, Ben Shapiro. This is a to-scale image, by the way. So he recently had some video pop up. Oh, there you go. Yeah. We'll see where he ends up by the end of this. So let's go to this video of him that popped up during the Super Bowl on my Twitter feed, showing what he really thinks about debate.
So the only other reason that you should ever have a conversation or be friends with anyone on the left is, and not even be friends, is if you are in public in front of a large audience, and then your goal is to humiliate them as badly as possible. That is the goal of the conversation. The goal is not to convince the person. The goal is not to make friends with that person. The conversations that are going to make the most difference on campus are the ones where you're in public in front of large groups of people or with a camera nearby, and your goal then is to make these people look as bad as possible.
Cool. Okay, so to the best of my knowledge, that video was not sped up. That's his voice. So look, he has made a career on saying, I'm a serious intellectual. I want to persuade people of my opinion, and I will go head to head with anyone on the opposite side in a battle of facts with no emotion and convince people that I'm right. But is that really what he's doing? Because he was very clear there. The entire purpose is to make them look bad, not to make them look wrong or not knowledgeable about the facts. None of this has anything to do with reality. It is just make them look bad. Okay? And this is the guy that wants a lot of credit for being a guy of ideas and philosophy and debate. And I'm hearkening back to a noble tradition of American political discourse. He's a sham.
He's a sham.
And the thing is, like, I don't really care too much about him individually, but he is, as I said, the avatar of this movement of people who are looking to make money by pretending to care about the issues and about persuading people. To the best of my knowledge, that person you saw in that video has never persuaded anyone of anything. He has people who agree with him, who will go to his speeches or watch his videos because they agree with him. They know that they will never have their views challenged whatsoever. Now, he responded to this saying, well done leaving out the word other in your false transcript. The only other reason is right there in the video, dishonest moron. So he's saying that video is taken out of context. There were other reasons that he gave for why you'd want to debate people. Okay, well, a friend of the show, Dan from the internet, has the actual whole transcript. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but some of the reasons he lists for debating people on the left is the first, that you're forced to under the rules of the classroom for some odd reason. Okay, that's not going to apply to most people. The second is because they're serving you food, which is a high likelihood. So that's even more insulting than the part you already saw. The other reason is if the person happens to be an honest leftist, you found the one honest leftist in America. So he doesn't actually believe that that is likely to happen. And then he goes into to humiliate them badly. And he says the conversations that are going to make the most difference on campus are the ones where you're in public in front of large groups of people with a camera nearby. And your goal then is to make those people look as bad as possible. So if he is influential, if there are people that follow him, if there are people who will hear that message and then act based on it, will this have a positive or a negative impact on political discourse in America? Will this produce a new generation of orators and persuaders, honest debaters? No, it's not going to do that. And he doesn't actually care about it. And people in the media need to stop buying his BS and putting him on shows and pretending that he is anything other than a grifter. He's a hack. He is not even a pundit. He's below that. He's less knowledgeable than actual pundits on TV. He is just damaging America. And for that reason, he belongs not on TV, not on the stage, but in a garbage can. And we've got one for him. Ben Shapiro, welcome to Garbage People. We awesome. Like to have a little fun.
No, that's good. That's my first time being here for Garbage People.
Thank you. That's where we descend the most into the garbage that we do on the show. I don't like to talk about him on the show, but he really just perfectly summarized the point that I've been trying to make for about a year. So thank you for the first time for doing that. Anyway. Anyway, by the way, if you have not already left a review of the Damage Report on iTunes for the Damage Report, please do that. We love reading them. It's a nice antidote to reading about politics on Twitter. You can do that. And if you do, there's a good chance we're going to read it on the show eventually. So please do that. Give us a 5-star rating. It really helps the show get out to more people who actually want to learn about the topics and engage in politics.
And you're on Facebook too.
We're on Facebook too.
Good Facebook page, yeah.
Facebook.com/TheDamageReportTYT. Thank you for remembering that.
Yeah.
Please follow it. More and more content going up on that every single day. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Always good to have you here.
Yay.
Thank you for watching. We'll be back tomorrow with more. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.